Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Inside SailTrek SOC. My name is Rhea. I am your host, and I'm really pleased to welcome my next guest. She is Carly Jackson, marine biologist. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Now, you have quite the resume. You are as well a sea turtle conservationist and a shark expert. Now, everybody's a shark expert and everybody gets really excited because sharks probably have the baddest rap on the face of the planet. And you're also a co-founder of Minorities in Shark Sciences.
Yes. Yep. I work with sea turtles and I'm a shark scientist. And, you know, I'm really happy to be able to work with like two really charismatic animals and also just really cool animals, even though I low-key think sharks are my passion. Love sharks the most, but...
Well, tell me a little bit about yourself. I mean, you know, you don't sort of, when you're wee, I'm sure that the first thing that you thought of was like, one day I'm going to grow up and be a marine biologist and I'm going to become a shark expert and, you know, be a conservationist for sea turtles. What sort of got you to start looking towards becoming a marine biologist? What led you to love it so much and to want to sort of take care of these marine animals?
I remember I was about... So I originally am from Detroit, Michigan. So I grew up far away from the ocean, really didn't have an easy way to access the ocean. And from a very young age, I think I was like 5 or 6, I saw a book that just had a picture of a shark on it. And I think it was like a National Geographic book. And I remember seeing it and being like, that looks really cool. And I really want to read it. So I begged my mom to buy the book for me. She did. And I read it and was just completely like captivated by sharks. I just loved sharks and just thought they were the coolest animals. And I decided, I was like, I want to be a shark scientist when I grew up and I want to work with sharks. So it stuck with me throughout my whole life. And, you know, it was one of those things where my parents were like, oh, like, that's cool, when I was little. And then I was in high school and was like, I still want to work with sharks. And they were like, okay, so this is real. But yeah, and I went to college in Florida because I was like, I need to be near the ocean to, you know, actually do some research. And finally got into my actual shark research in grad school. And that's when I also picked up a job with sea turtles. And sea turtles weren't originally something I was really like into, but it was a job and I was like, oh, like I'll go for it and get my foot in the door in this field, and ended up loving it. And, you know, work with sea turtles, and I still work with sea turtles now. I'm a sea turtle research associate, but my main research has always been on sharks, and I just really love sharks and really all species, especially nurse sharks, which I worked with in my master's study. But yeah, sharks and sea turtles are awesome.
Well, tell me, you know, sharks are probably the most misunderstood in the world. You know, people, I guess it probably started way back in the days of Jaws, if anybody remembers the film Jaws. But they are essential. You know, they are absolutely essential to the ocean, to the seas, to our waterways. People feel no fear. You know, it's like you see a shark or kill it if it's coming towards you. But they're not all predators to humans. They're not looking to eat a human. They're not looking to bite off your leg. They are essential to our waterways. Can you explain a little bit to the audience about sharks and why we should give them the respect they deserve?
Yeah, that was learning more about sharks. So I was originally a little bit scared of sharks, but also like my interest in them and just how fascinating they were really just overtook that fear. And the more I read books about sharks and just was completely in love with these misunderstood creatures, and they get this bad rep. It does kind of go back to Jaws, but even before then, and like a bunch of like myths and like folklore, it's, you know, there's these huge animals with big teeth and just attacking people. Oh my gosh, it's horrible. But in reality, you know, there are over 500 different species of sharks, and the average size for a shark is actually like 5 feet or less. And a lot of people don't know that. And the majority of sharks are small, and, you know, they eat smaller things. They don't eat like huge whales or seals all the time. So sharks, they are apex predators, and some of them are mesopredators, which means they're not at the very top of the food chain in their environment. They're kind of in the middle. And they're extra important because they help regulate a lot of their prey populations. So if prey populations get, or if sharks are removed from the scene, their prey populations can just overgrow, and that can just cause so many problems because they can overeat certain vegetation or other animals that their prey feeds on, and they can just cause overcrowding in certain areas of the ocean, and that will just lead to other catastrophic things like in that environmental area. So sharks really are kind of the cleanup crew of the ocean, and they help regulate a lot of food chains and a lot of the ocean system. So they're really important for our environment, and they do get a bad rep because unfortunately they don't have hands like we do. So, you know, they're pretty curious creatures and they want to figure out what something is, but the same way we explore things with our hands, they do it with their mouths, which is pretty unfortunate for us because they're like, oh, what are you? Let me just figure out what you are. They bite instead of, you know, touching with hands. So, and sometimes the bite can be fatal, but, you know, they're not, there's really never been instances in a lot of shark attacks you hear where a shark actually comes back and finishes to like eat a person. They bite and then they leave because they figured out, you are not what I thought you were, so I'm just gonna leave. But yeah, so they're very essential for our oceans, and you know, without them, our oceans will not be healthy.
Well, what advice would you give people? Say they were, you know, in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea or the Caribbean, and they encountered sharks and they were in the water. What advice would you give someone to make sure that the shark doesn't say, I want to have a taste and see what that is?
Yeah, sharks are very, let's see, they use a lot of their external senses. So they have electrosensories, and they can feel different pressures in the water. And really just being very still in the water would kind of like make you almost invisible to them. Not completely, but, you know, like they'll just be like, okay, like this is like, the more you kind of spread yourself out a little too, you kind of look like a little big, so they're like, like I'm not really gonna mess with this because it's a lot bigger than I thought it was. But honestly, I'd say a big thing is to just stay calm and to be aware of your surroundings, because sharks are very quick, they're speedy, and they can, you know, the ocean is their turf. They know how to move around and hide in different places, and you know, just they're very, you know, they're mysterious creatures. So I would definitely just stay as calm as possible and just pray that there's not a shark for them. No. but yeah, I mean, like sharks really aren't like hunting. They're like, oh, there's something in the water and I have to eat it. Like they don't eat, most sharks don't even eat every day. They eat like every couple days, or like they don't even need to eat every day. So the majority of the time the shark is really hungry for you.
Well, and it's generally fish, right? It's exactly. Not like, you know, they're not looking for a cow under the water,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. That's like, why, like, if you're, we're bigger than most of their prey, like, unless you're like a small child, but for the most part, most adults are a lot bigger than what anything shark, most sharks would go after. So they would just be, unless it's just like a huge shark, but, you know, there's really not, there's only like probably a handful of gigantic sharks out there.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, it's such a shame because you see that there's a large segment of the population that are, you know, very, very afraid, and fear tends to breed ignorance, as it were. And That's when we experience problems, I think. And I think, you know, we've seen it. There's been news reports out of Fort Lauderdale where people have been, you know, pulling sharks by their tails and, you know, for game, for sport, just, you know, Harming these animals just for fun. And it's a shame because that's the same as, you know, I think people, because it's not your pet dog from next door, you know, they don't put the same weight on it. And that's an absolute shame.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely like, they're just such important creatures for our ocean. And, you know, like I would hope that people start to go away from the whole game hunting, especially like our endangered species. Like here in Florida, you can still fish for great hammerheads off shore fishing, and just, you know, as long as you catch and release. But great hammerheads get stressed out. Like they get the most stressed out of all shark species. So they fight extremely hard when they're on a line, and they literally stress themselves out to death. They stress to death. So it's like such an important species, critically endangered species to our waters, is you know, just being hunted for sport and then released. But usually when they're released, they just don't survive because they've been fighting so hard and were damaged so much during during the whole fight while fishing.
How many species of sharks are endangered at the moment?
I can't remember the exact number, but I do know about 20%, 20 to 30%, I believe, of shark species are endangered or threatened. So in hindsight, not a lot, but it's still like they're just important. You just never want to see a creature that important to the environment get removed from the environment. And each shark has a special like niche that they fit in. So
now, is this a result of overfishing of their food source, or is this a result of overfishing of them?
It depends on the species. Each species is endangered for completely, you know, different reasons. And it depends on where they are. Some of it can be overfishing of the shark itself, because they are fished in some places for food. And since they are long-lived species, they don't reproduce like hundreds of babies at a time. They anywhere between 2 to 5 after they reach a certain age. So it's hard for them to repopulate their population. Some other reasons why sharks are endangered can be like habitat removal. So if they don't have a habitat to live in, then they won't, you know, their food source also doesn't have a habitat to live in. And that just, you know, has an effect on them because they need the food to survive. So, and another one is definitely like pollution. So just, you know, runoff water, just causing a lot of like red tide, things that we're seeing in Western Florida right now. Red tide that takes all the oxygen out of the water and is very toxic to a lot of shark species, and they have to find refuge, and some of them don't survive as well. So there's a whole lot of different factors that go into why some species are endangered, but a lot of it is, well, all of it is human induced. So.
Well, and you know what, that scares me, because if you actually think what these sharks, and it's not just sharks, it's purely ocean life. You know, when you talk about the red tide and it's taking the oxygen out of the water, can you imagine, as a human being, all of a sudden, certain areas of your world, there was no oxygen and you couldn't breathe? I mean, if that was happening on land, my word, would we be acting fast to fix it?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And it, because it's in the water, we're not doing as much as we possibly could, and not nearly as quickly as we should. But nobody's actually taking that leap to think, well, if we don't have the sea, we will die, because that is, you know, intricately linked to life on land.
Yeah. I think our other issue is that we take it for granted. We're like, it's the ocean. It's not going anywhere. We're not going to, there's nothing that can hurt the ocean, but, you know, there's a lot of data coming out now that's saying like, we need to get our act together, or else, you know, there's a lot of things that we're doing that's affecting our oceans and making it, you know, so that we can't get certain resources from the ocean in like 50 years or so. But even then, that's not a very long time from now.
No, you know, and personally, I have children, and I think,
exactly.
You know, they're going to, my youngest just turned 13. Now, 50 years from now, he's going to be 60. So he's still going to be here, hopefully, if there's a planet left.
Right.
You know, and that's the key. Will there be a planet left? Will we continue to, you know, take advantage of all the resources that we have here and, you know, have other people flying off into space for a looky-loo? Well, we really don't care about what's going on this planet, and things need to change. Now, when you talk about sea turtle conservation, what is going on with the sea turtle population?
So the sea turtle populations, again, it varies on the species, but the three species that I've worked with are loggerhead sea turtles, green sea turtles, and leatherbacks. So leatherbacks are endangered, and a lot of their pressure comes from the fishing industry. So they're just such large animals. And they spend their whole life in the open ocean until they come to the nest or to the beaches to nest. But they get caught in a lot of fishing line. They get caught in trawls. So those big nets that get all the fish or the shrimp, they can get the leatherbacks as well. And they're just, like I said, they're just such big animals. They can easily get caught in a lot of fishing gear out in the open ocean. And then the green sea turtles, they actually are the species that is commonly eaten, I think, in the Caribbean. And they used to be eaten in the Keys in Florida. But that stopped once they became federally protected. But we actually almost like literally fished them to extinction here in Florida. And you know, sea turtles, it takes them 25 years to reach maturity to reproduce. So you take out the adults, that's a big hit on their population. So, but the green sea turtles actually are a conservation success story. So their populations are finally bouncing back because their conservation efforts started about 30 years ago. So we're finally seeing like the result of those efforts now with all the adults coming in to nest and everything. So that's a positive thing. But overall, like the sea turtle populations, it depends on the region, because not all regions have them protected, have certain species protected, but a lot of their issues are with the fishing, getting caught in lines, or just being caught for their shells or for their meat.
Well, and I did watch that documentary, Sustainability. That was quite an eye opener. I do know a few people in conservation within the Met, and you know, of course, like every documentary, there's going to be some editing done that makes it maybe perhaps a little bit more shocking or more value financially than perhaps just the bare facts. But even if 50% of the way that was portrayed is true, it's frightening. And as well, you know, one thing about the turtles is that if they have something wrapped around a fin, it's a fin, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Or if they have something,
flipper. There we go.
Flipper. Yeah. if they have something wrapped around their flipper, and you can't just cut that off and set them free. You have to take them and have them looked at, because cutting it off, I guess it would be like you or I having, you know, the blood, the circulation cut off on an arm for a long period of time. And you need to go to the hospital and you need to make sure that everything is going to be reconnected, because that limb could die.
Exactly. Yeah, I actually worked in a sea turtle rehab facility for 5 years as well. And we had a lot of entanglement injuries coming through our hospital. And sometimes we did have to amputate the flipper because it was just, the humerus would just be broken and swollen and just filled with liquid. And, you know, we'd do our best to, you know, try and save the flipper, but sometimes we did have to amputate flippers because the line was just wrapped so hard around their flipper that it caused it to break and just was unrepairable. So it's definitely a big issue and something that I see all the time, unfortunately.
And what happens to those turtles then that have a flipper amputated, for example? Are they kept in a shelter?
No, so we keep them for like another month or two and then we let them go because they, you know, there's probably so many turtles out there that have lost a flipper that we haven't, you know, that haven't come through our rehab facility. It's the same as like if a human lost an arm, they figure out how to use their left arm or their opposite arm and, you know, they're fine. So the turtles are fine once we release them back out. They swim around just fine.
They figure it out. Well, you know what? That's amazing. The way that, you know, human nature is able to bounce back and just do what they need to do, you know?
Yep.
Now, minorities in shark sciences, what is the importance of that?
Yeah, so we started MIS about a year ago, and it was, you know, I met the three other co-founders through Twitter. in response to all the civil unrest happening last summer.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of Black people in conservation were trying to break that stereotype of, you know, Black people don't like to go outside, Black people don't like to swim, all of that. So, I think I had posted something on Twitter like, oh, hashtag Black in Nature, pictures of me with sharks, all this stuff. And it got a lot of traction. And Jasmine, our president now, she commented on it and was like, oh my gosh, another Black girl in shark science. And I was just like, oh my gosh, because I'd never met another Black anyone in shark science my whole entire academic career. And it was just kind of like, oh my gosh, there's someone else who looks like me in this field. And same thing happened with Jada and Imani. We all kind of just like connected through that. And we were like, let's start a club. And the club turned into a whole organization. So we just kind of bonded through shared experiences that we had in this field. And our mission statement is to highlight and increase the diversity that's within shark sciences, because, you know, there's a lot of women of color doing research in shark science, but you don't really hear about them because they're a lot of times their voices are silenced, or, you know, on Shark Week, it's just a bunch of white male, like, testosterone being thrown around, honestly. And and yeah, so we just wanted to create a community where we can, you know, provide opportunity, break down a lot of barriers that prevent women of color, just people of color in general, to getting into this field. And, you know, we all had our own types of experiences getting into this field, and we wanted to make it a lot easier, affordable, and just like more accessible to people of color. So
I think that's amazing. You know, we all tend to, in marketing 101, we tend to go towards something that we feel is for us, no matter who you are on the face of the planet. So as a young Black woman, I can imagine it would have been difficult. You didn't see, you know, those people in the sciences that were on the covers of magazines and think, yeah, I can be that. You know, it's something that you had in your head, and you had that stamina and you had that strength, and you knew that was what you were going to be, and you carried on. But, you know, not everybody has that kind of thing deep within them. They do need to have that helping hand, that they do need to be able to see that those options are out there. And I think that's absolutely brilliant. And you know, it's a great thing that you're doing. And I see more of this popping up, not just in the sciences, but in every industry out there. People are banding together and saying, you know what, we're a minority. We may be, you know, Black, we may be Asian, we may be whatever, Filipino, et cetera, but we may be LGBTQ, but we can do it. So, you know what, we're here to help you do it if you want to do it too. Right. And sometimes that's all it takes. It's amazing.
Yep. Yep, just banding together and being like, you know what, enough is enough.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we're just, like I said, just making sure that people, or at least, you know, little Black girls know that they are able to come into this field and they deserve to be here and they have a right to be here just as much as anyone else in this field. So that is, yeah, so that's really important to me, and that's really important to miss the organization in general as well.
Well, and I just have to say, if I have to hear that Black people can't swim one more time, I think I may jump off a bit.
And I was a competitive swimmer all through up through college, so I got that a lot, actually. I was just like, and they were like, oh, Black people swim. I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't even know where. I mean, we know where that stereotype came from, but it's something that just needs to be put to rest now.
It does. It's like, I don't even know how that continued on. And for some people to still believe it, like, it's just one of those things that I would be happy. I have a show on Yachting International Radio called Diversity in Yachting. And every single one of these shows that my host, Gabriella, does, I think there's maybe been two out of a whole series of shows that statement hasn't come up. And I am just about ready to say, you know what, if somebody, I'm cutting that out next time, because I you know, like, let's put that, y'all can swim. Everyone can swim.
Right.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're taught how to swim, exactly. some people just honestly can't swim. I mean, you know, it does happen, but we all can learn how to swim. So the idea of that blanket statement is time for that to go to bed. So if anybody is interested in getting a hold of you or interested in getting into the sciences or it just needs some support, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, so through MIS, we have a membership program. So we have literally over 300 members from like 25 different countries. So you don't have to live in the US at all to be a part of our membership community. And you can go to misselasmo.org. So misselasmo.org. And you can navigate to our membership page and it's free to become a member. And you know, you'll have access to a lot of resources. We provide internships and workshops specifically for our members. If you think you might be interested in shark sciences or you're just, you know, like, oh, I'm just trying to figure out what to do, then become a member. It doesn't matter. and there's no, you know, you have to be at least in high school, but there's no age stop as well. So, and then all of our social media is @miss_elasmo. That's for Twitter and Instagram. We also have a Facebook page and a YouTube page. We keep everything as updated as possible. And then personally, my Instagram and Twitter is @CarlyMJ_. So CARLEE, the letter M, and then J, and then underscore.
Well, you'll make sure to provide us with that. We can put that underneath so that people will just have to click. Much easier, even for me. I always hate those people that they do say that, then there's actually no link underneath.
You're like, oh my gosh.
So you have to go back, right? And then you're like trying to type it in and pause the podcast. And yeah, it doesn't work. So we always provide the links for our viewers underneath. Guys, don't you worry. Check down below. They're there. And you know what? Even if somebody isn't interested in science, the fact is if they're interested in the environment and how to do better, you know, they can get that kind of information direct from you.
Exactly. Yeah, we have a Friends of MIS program as well. If you're not a woman of color, or just don't fit the description to become a member, then you can become a friend of MIS. It's like a supportive role. You're still involved with the members and everything. But so that's an option as well. And that's also on our website.
Nice. Well, you know what? I do encourage everybody to check it out. Just even from a general information standpoint, when it comes to sharks and sea turtles and, you know, the ocean in general, it's such a shame that so many people don't actually have the knowledge that they probably should when it comes to our waterways. And every chance that I have to learn, I take up on it. So I am going to be heading over and signing up so that I can get some information. Awesome. And keep up to date. And you know what, I would love for you to come back and give us some more information down the road and check out some more of your research.
For sure. Yeah, I'd love that.
Nice. Well, Carly, I want to say thank you for your time. It's been very much appreciated.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Well, you taught me something this time, so I'm sure next time you'll teach me something again. You've been listening to marine biologist Carly Jackson. She is co-founder of Minorities in Shark Sciences. She's a sea turtle conservationist, a shark expert out of Orlando, Florida. My name is Rhea. I have been your host. We'll see you again next time.